This is Tech Dip Voice, a podcast from the Kroc Institute for Tech Diplomacy at Purdue. This podcast features Purdue University President-elect Dr. Meng Qiang. He is joined by James Litinsky, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of MP Materials. In this episode, they will discuss rare earth elements and their implications.
Hello, my name is Meng Qiang from Purdue University, and welcome to another episode in our podcast series on tech diplomacy here. And today, we're delighted to have Jim Litinsky, the CEO of MP Material, with us to discuss rare earth elements.
Thank you, Dr. Chang, and to you and all your colleagues at Purdue. It's a pleasure to join you today.
Well, thank you for taking the time. And congratulations on many exciting development of Mountain Pass, an American company in this important area. But first, maybe you could let us know in your mind, why are rare earth elements so important? Why are some of the magnets and other products that they are used to produce so important to the entire economy?
Sure. Magnets are synonymous with motion in modern life. So few people recognize it, but if we look around at the world that is electrifying around us, electric vehicles, wind turbines, drones, robots, our lives pretty much increasingly depend on the magnetics that allow for the motion in those objects. And if you need a very high powered, efficient magnet where size, weight, performance matters, it's very likely it's a rare earth magnet. And so for most of those items I mentioned, it's pretty much 90%+ share a rare earth magnet. One thing, Dr. Chang, that people might not be aware of is actually the rare earth magnet was invented here in the U.S., but we no longer manufacture them domestically. Our mission at MP Materials is to bring that supply chain home.
Earlier this year, I think Mountain Pass announced a magnetic manufacturing facility in Texas and a partnership with General Motors. So why is the company moving beyond materials itself and the mining and the refinery, but also into magnet manufacturing and doing it here in the United States?
Well, let me give you some quick context to give you the full stream of our mission over the past 5 years. So when we founded MP in 2017, Mountain Pass had at the time had been run by a predecessor. The company had failed and gone into bankruptcy. A lot of people believed that the USA could not compete in the rare earth industry, that China had essentially taken over the supply chain and that we just couldn't be economic. My team and I, we relaunched that facility in 2017. We've taken U.S. capability from zero to 15% of global supply. So the site that we own and operate in California today at Mountain Pass is the world's second largest. But it's not a complete mission if we're still taking those materials and our downstream, great downstream companies making EVs or wind turbines or whatever other products, if they still have to buy the midstream product, i.e. the magnet that rare earth is made out of, if they're buying it from somewhere offshore, then we haven't fully onshored the supply chain. So we'll continue to move downstream to eliminate that single point of failure threat throughout our economy, and which means that we've got to go from not just making the rare earth, but also the magnet that that rare earth goes into. And frankly, it's a tremendous business opportunity for us. I think if you look around the world today, we can all see the extraordinary growth coming in electric vehicles alone. And so MP, given the assets and the incredible assets, as well as human capital assets that we have, we are really years and billions ahead of anybody else who is attempting to do this.
Well, that is exciting. You mentioned jumpstarting or restarting this from 0% representation inside our country to 15% and the world's second largest source of Moncton in Moncton Pass, California. So which particular rare earth elements can be found in Moncton Pass, California?
So there are 17 rare earth elements. Every rare earth ore body in the world is slightly different. They go from, if you think of the periodic table, they go from, you know, from the lights on the left all the way to the heavies on the right. We will produce most, but not all of them. But the primary rare earths that matter for electrification are the key ingredient, which will be a 90% plus, you know, revenue product out of Mountain Pass for us, will be NdPr, neodymium, praseodymium. And then there'll be a handful of some of the heavies. We'll also make lanthanum oxide and cerium oxide.
Okay, that's exciting. And you mentioned, as you were introducing the past 5 years history of the new Mountain Pass as a company, you highlighted that China has a dominant position in the global supply chain, which feeds into things such as electrification, electric vehicle, among many other critical parts of our digital economy. So do you think that our country, America, can catch up?
Well, absolutely. China has an overwhelming lead, no doubt. The American manufacturing spirit is very strong when we're focused and when we work together. And so we've gone from what was essentially a site of eight people in care maintenance. A lot of people at the time had wanted to send it into reclamation. We relaunched it, and now we're producing more rare earth in the United States of America than we ever have in the 70-year history of rare earths in the USA. The practical reality is that we need a lot more of these materials to electrify the global economy. And so what really matters is that we eliminate the single point of failure threat. I mean, I think that was a big lesson, certainly from, you know, the challenges around COVID and certainly the war in Europe, et cetera. And so we need to have this capability. We don't need to dominate it all, but we certainly need to have a very large capability so that we are not, wholly reliant. And so to answer your question directly, absolutely, we can catch up. We are doing it at MP today.
Well, in 70 years, this is the most exciting moment here on this important topic. And what you just said reminds me of the importance of chips, semiconductor, to the entire digital economy. Its importance to national security, economic security, and job security across so many industries. And it sounds like these rare earth elements and what they can produce and enable are occupying a similarly essential position in the global supply chain of economy. And of course, we know that President Biden just signed the Bipartisan CHIPS Plus Science Act, and the CHIPS portion has been appropriated already. And we are looking at a rebirth of the semiconductor manufacturing and packaging industry inside the US now. If I remember correctly, earlier this year, President Biden announced a DOD, Department of Defense, award to support Mountain Pass work here too. So what is your view, Jim, on the role for the federal and state government to, you know, retip the balance of the market competition and reshore these critical elements such as chips and rare earth?
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Cheng, I'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate you and your colleagues at Purdue again for the recent visit from Secretaries Blinken and Raimondo, because certainly Purdue on the semiconductors front has really led the way as far as showing that scale is really important when it comes to reshoring. We need to have, it's not just having the capability or training some talent, but we need to do this at scale. And I think that the rare earth industry is a very close analogy to the challenge of semiconductors. Certainly, it's not as large of an industry, but particularly for electrification and sustainability, it is just as critical from the standpoint of we've got to get this supply chain home. The practical reality is, I think the role of government here is we need to level the playing field. China has frankly, very intelligently taken over this industry by really supporting their industry from, you know, all the way from the upstream through the downstream. And what we need to do is we need to level the playing field so that our companies can compete equivalently. And you're seeing that. I think the IRA recently, that tax policy should help lower the cost of capital to get more projects underway, broaden this supply chain. Certainly, I think we could do some work on permitting. Ultimately, though, I do think that the challenge and the solution is really one. It is frankly a government and university slash research institution solution that needs to come about in working with companies like MP, for example, because this is a challenge of scale, as we just discussed. We need a lot of skilled engineers, chemists, material scientists, you know, experts in magnetic compounds. And so when you think about the incentives that government can produce, and then certainly the great human capital that universities like Purdue can produce, combined with certainly MP Materials, but we won't be alone. We need to combine all of these efforts to really compete on the global stage. And so it's really a function of bringing together all of those components. And you had mentioned that, earlier this year, there was I was on a live webcast with President Biden where he wanted to announce the award to with the partnership with DOD and MP Materials. And so I think that focus from government of how important reshoring this capability is, or getting this capability in the USA, that focus from the very top really matters, both I assume on your side from a research and university side, and certainly from a private sector side, as we are making enormous investments. As part of that announcement, just to finish off, we at MP announced that we're going to be investing $700 million, completing the last pieces of the supply chain through magnetics. And that'll happen actually in two areas. It'll happen with completing projects at Mountain Pass, as well as the magnetics facility that we're building in Fort Worth, Texas, which is although we broke ground just a few months ago, we've made a lot of progress in getting that facility online. And that is where we will metallize and magnetize the materials that we're producing at Mountain Pass. So it's really quite exciting, and it's going to take a lot of support across the way, but we're making a lot of progress on the mission.
Well, you said it very well, that it's about leveling the playing field, and it's about providing a conducive environment whereby the business growth can be sustained. And that's particularly important when it comes to things such as chips, without which there are no cars and fighter jets and phones, right? And things such as rare earth elements, without which there's no battery and there's no electrification and decarbonization. They are so foundational to the future economy and to national economic and job securities that they deserve the attention. And you highlighted, yes, government, but also universities and research institutions that can innovate, whether it is the chemical engineers working on this, or is the automation by robotic engineers and many more. So, Jim, can you please elaborate a bit more? How do you see the roles that universities can meaningfully play and contribute to securing the rare earth element supply chain?
I think that it is sort of a continuation, and I go back because I'm grateful as an American of the work that you all have done at Purdue. But I do again think it's the perfect analogy of the scale that's required. Because if take the semiconductor analogy, you can have great software to make a chip do something, but if you can't make that chip scale economically, unfortunately, you're going to be reliant on somewhere else in the world that may or may not be a risk. And so getting that great intellectual property converted into a product, in this case, you know, a chip that can move a car, requires scale. It's not just a couple talented software engineers, that can write a great program, for example. It really requires a huge amount of people and capital to turn that knowledge into a workable product. And again, in our space, it is the same concept, where certainly there's not as much intellectual property from a software standpoint. But when we think about those materials and the magnets, we can make a great magnet, but if we can't make them at scale to supply our downstream industry, we will not be the leaders. The downstream industry is going to buy elsewhere. And then ultimately that is, again, a break in the supply chain. And so I think universities like Purdue can help bring together, help get that talent in place, because we've got to have, You know, we're talking about a huge workforce as we start to build out these facilities, and a lot of knowledge that will be needed. So I think and from that, I would also say then once we get that in place, and MPE, as we've just discussed, is leading the way with our Fort Worth facility. Once we get that in place, then the question will be, how do we lower those costs? How do we get our manufacturing process more efficient? How can we minimize the waste, maximize the impact of, maximize the, you know, the properties of a magnet, and all of those steps along the way? You know, there's a lot of creative research and execution that has to happen to bring those costs down and make it a better, more efficient process. And so I think that's a way that, you know, the great universities and research institutions can work with companies like ours, because we can't just focus on, you know, moonshot projects. I think that those are important, but we've also got to do this pragmatically and understand that, you know, when scale matters, it's going to require a lot of people to move this forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, to scale, as you said, Jim, that indeed we need the talent pipeline and we need the innovation pipeline, whereby the economic boundary conditions can be rewritten through technological breakthroughs, so that we'll be able to sustain the continuous innovation of these critical industries. And that's where, on both the talent and innovation front, I hope universities can work with leading private sector innovators such as your company.
If I could say, Dr. Chang, I think, and maybe this is a message to some of your students and graduate students, but I firmly believe that the magnetics industry today is a small scale version of the semiconductor industry in the 60s, where it really is, and there's extraordinary opportunity to come into this space. You can look around the world and see all of the applications, the motion applications that are going to change our lives over the next decade or two. Again, electric vehicles, wind turbines, drones, robots. There are going to be so many things, and none of us today know what will be use cases that will drive extraordinary economic growth and benefit and all of those things. But we certainly know that the magnet inside is going to really be a key component of powering that progress. And so this is a great space. If you're thinking about where to spend your time and dedicate your career, you know, take a look at the space, because we'd love you to get trained and to hire you, because we have a lot, a long, long way to go, and a lot of tailwind.
That's a great message for the future to our students. Thank you again so much. We look forward to more onshoring of the upstream and downstream of this whole supply chain surrounding rare earth and all the industry that it is going to enable essentially to America. So thank you so much again, and thank you for listening.
This has been Tech Dip Voice, a podcast from the Kroc Institute for Tech Diplomacy at Purdue. Further information on some of the issues discussed in this podcast can be found on our website, techdiplomacy.org.